This is the Just Sports Talk podcast. Welcome to the show. We're joined by J.R. Manatez, Stefano Puleggi, Tristan Marchigiani. Stefano, what do we got on the lineup today?
Well, J.R., we got lots to talk about today, starting with the Toronto Maple Leafs. From the Toronto Maple Leafs, we'll be going into a little bit about around the NHL. And then from the NHL, we'll make our way to the hardwood with the NBA, what's going on in the NBA, and championship weekend in the NFL. So let's get her started here.
Well, first, we're also joined by a special guest. Dimitri Daffel is joining us. He might, you know, stick around for a bit.
Credit to Christian Forget for the music and Michele Curia for the great logo. We appreciate all the help, guys.
All right, let's get into the Toronto Maple Leafs. So this past Tuesday, they lost 2-1 in OT after a 1-0 lead in regulation in overtime. And just yesterday,
another 2-0 blown lead
against the Flyers. What did you guys think of that game?
I thought I was watching a repeat of this has become a habit for the team. I mean, when was the last time they didn't blow a lead? Honestly, this week alone, they blew it to St. Louis. They blew it to Philadelphia. I don't know what the problem is, Steph. You got any ideas?
It's frustrating to watch because, I mean, the Toronto Maple Leafs, they are a good team. No questions asked. They can score goals. They can skate. They're one of the fastest teams in the NHL, but I don't know what it is about not being able to play defense and close out games. One thing that stood out to me last night, and I'll pull it up here, was Frederik Andersen, one of the most consistent performers on the Toronto Maple Leafs. He had a rough October, but since the start of November, he's been solid for them in goal. And he's frustrated. He actually called out his teammates.
Was this post-game?
This was post-game, after the game. And he said, I quote, he said, "We've got to regroup. We got to figure out who wants to commit to playing for this team." I want to ask, what do you guys think of that, Tristan? What's your take on something like that? Is that something the team needed to hear from, maybe if they're not just hearing it from Mike Babcock, but to hear it from one of their most consistent performers, do you think this is something the team might need to come around, a leader that can speak up? Because it's clearly shown that Frederik Andersen is frustrated, and he's done absolutely everything for the team he could possibly do. So what's your thoughts on this?
I mean, yeah, I think they did need to hear that message. I don't know if Freddie saying it like that was the appropriate thing to do in front of the media. You see a lot of in today, especially in the sports world today, you see a lot of players, instead of directly saying something to their teammates' face, they indirectly say it to the media or on social media. Excuse me. It's something they definitely need to hear, though, because it's true what Freddie said, right? Who wants to play for the team? Who wants to play on a night-to-night basis? And that's my problem with the Toronto Maple Leafs. You sort of touched into this, Stefano. Yes, their defense is a big problem. It really is. They need to get another defenseman and quickly. I don't know if you call up Timothy Liljegren, you call up Callie Rosen in the minors. My problem with the Maple Leafs, though, is it's not all in the defense necessarily, but it's about, this team doesn't have an identity. This team is an offensive juggernaut. We know that, right? They can put up the points, they could put up the goals, but you don't know what you're going to get every night from the team. Are you going to get the team that scored 7 goals opening night against Winnipeg and then scored 8 goals against the New York Rangers the next game? Or are you going to get the team like this week where you had leads in against St. Louis and Philadelphia and you blow both of them? I mean, yes, the defensive core is a big problem, but we also can't ignore the fact that the forwards aren't producing either. I have an interesting stat here. Do you know what the lowest plus minus on the team is? -8. Do you know who owns that plus minus? Connor Brown, a forward. In fact, the lowest plus minuses on the team are all forwards. Patrick Marleau's a -5. Mitch Marner's a -2. JVR's also a -2. Do you know what the lowest plus minus is by a defenseman? It's a three-way tie between Roman Polak, Morgan Riley, and Jay Gardner. They're all minus two. So the forwards are on the ice, and they're giving the puck up too. You can't expect the defenseman to always pick up the slack if the forwards aren't producing either, which is a problem, I think, going forward. I do understand the defense, like I said before, they need to be addressed. It needs to be addressed, the defensive situation, but I just don't think all the blame can go towards the defense.
But do you think that's why isn't Connor Brown on the fourth line?
Yeah. He's on the fourth line.
Well, he got dropped on the fourth line by Mike Babcock.
Mike Babcock's been using him as a fourth line player for most of the season. He is one of their, I would say, smartest defensive players. He does play a lot of the penalty kill. And last night during the Philadelphia game, Babcock wasn't seeing something that was working, so he decided to move up Connor Brown, play him on that first unit with Matthews and Hyman, and he moved Willie to the fourth line with Martin and Gauthier, but turned out it worked. Brown scored, and 28 seconds later, William Nylander dished the puck to Gauthier, and he put it in the net. So, Dimitri, guest speaker today, thanks for joining us today. What do you think about something like this?
In respects to Freddie Anderson's comments?
Yep.
Well, I actually didn't mind it at all, to be honest, because I think, as you can see, no one on the Toronto Maple Leafs actually has that C on their jersey as of yet. Ooh. And I think you need leaders like this
to speak out.
Yeah, because when you actually have someone that is expressing their frustration, it's a wake-up call to not only the team, but to the coaching staff and the management above. Because when things aren't right, things need to be tweaked. You know, whether it be putting someone from the first to the fourth line, like we've seen a numerous times this year, or maybe putting that person from the fourth to the first line. Any energy or anything that you can change that will help the team, you got to change and see what can be better.
Yes, but do you think that could cause a problem going forward? Like, do you think the teammates now, they can't trust Freddie in front of the media? Do you think maybe that's an issue going forward because it's Freddie was the one who called them out, not necessarily not the coach or anyone like that?
I don't think there's a problem with any of this. I just think, you know, like we've been mentioning before earlier in the podcast, they've blown a lot of leads, two-goal leads. You know, they say a two-goal lead is the worst lead in hockey. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is, but you know what? A team will never go through a season without going through the highest of highs and the lowest of lows.
Okay.
You know, it's easy to talk and praise a team when they're at their best, but the true colors of an organization from top to bottom comes out when you're at the lowest of lows, because that's when you need leaders. Even though there's no C on the jersey, those leaders will step up and they'll be able to show.
Do you think he's going to step up in their Hockey Night in Canada game against Ottawa?
Well, let's hope. I mean, three of their five consecutive games now, they've blown a goal or a two-goal lead. And going back to what Dimitri said, every team goes through the lowest of lows. Now, this team last season shocked, I would say, absolutely everyone in the city of Toronto. Considering they finished in second last, or dead last, I should say, the year before. You know, Mike Babcock, when he did come here, he did say that there was going to be pain and there was going to be struggle with this team. Now, I think a lot of this goes into the Leafs still don't know who they are as a team. They're still trying to build an identity in the NHL. Offensive powerhouses, I get, but like, they're still trying to figure out how to win on an every night basis. You look at teams like Tampa Bay. Heck, even Las Vegas, a brand new team. They're winning games, and they're finding a way to do it each and every single night. So to say, you know, I think a little bit of that goes into Mike Babcock, but also this team's got to figure out what's going on right now.
The last thing I actually wanted to touch up on is at the beginning of the year, everyone was freaking out because the Pittsburgh Penguins were in a huge slump, and everyone thought that they've repeated as champs 2 years in a row. They won't do it this year. It's too early to actually draw conclusions and say, you know what, a team's done. They don't have a chance. Because look at the way the Pittsburgh Penguins have regrouped. And now they're actually slowly making their way back up, up, and up, right? Again, the Metropolitan Division is really tough. I think every team in the division is actually above 500. So that division's always going to be tough. And I think the experience of Crosby, Malkin, and everyone, those colors will truly show after the All-Star game. And we already know the Penguins are going to make the playoffs. They're going to make a run. And because you have the best player in the world on your team, you're always going to have a chance to win that Stanley Cup.
No, I agree with you on that, Dimitri. I think I agree with you on the point that it's way too early for any team, not just Pittsburgh, any team, especially in Toronto, right? Toronto, every game is under a microscope with the media, with the fans, right? So sometimes it gets blown out of proportion, the littlest of things. But I want to go back to what Stefano said, because he made a good point there about the identity. And like I said before, right, they're an offensive juggernaut. The Leafs could put up the points easily. The problem is when they're not putting up the points, or they put up a few points, can they hold the lead? Can they be trusted defensively? So far, they've shown us that's not the case, right? And you look at teams like Boston, who forecheck hard, who are gritty, who are going to get dirty in the corners. You look at a team like Pittsburgh, for like you brought up, Dimitri. They work the neutral zone. They pass the puck. They're able to put pucks on net. Those teams have an identity. You know what you're going to get from them every single night. The Toronto Maple Leafs, you can get an absolute offensive explosion, and then you can get a defensive breakdown like you saw yesterday. So until this team is, and that's what Freddie's trying to allude to. I don't think Freddie is necessarily saying who wants to play for this team. I think what Freddie's trying to say is who wants to play like they can every single night. Who wants to show that the Toronto Maple Leafs are what the Toronto Maple Leafs are. The fans know that this team is better than what they've been playing as, and I think that's what Freddie's trying to allude to.
Who do you think Freddie was calling out? Because I think I can list a few names. From a personal opinion.
Well, there's a reason he didn't single anybody out. Well, first of all,
because that looks bad. That wouldn't look bad.
Yeah, that wouldn't look good in the media.
But we could, as you know, fans and you know, future journalists, we could, you know, say we think he's calling out. Like, what do you think?
Well, he's obviously frustrated with the defenseman. I mean, okay, Stefano, go ahead. I think you have some names. Fine.
Well, I'm looking at he's getting, on average, I'll say about 40 shots a night.
Mm-hmm.
And letting in, what, one or two goals? I look at the goals that went in on him last night, and you know, sure, there were two he liked to have back, but you know what? They were lucky bounces as well. Me personally, I think he's talking about not necessarily a defensive standpoint. It's the way his offensemen are playing in the defensive zone. You look at last night. You're on a power play, okay? You're winning 2-1. I get it. It happens. But there are no excuses for odd man rushes when you're on a power play. And they scored a shorthanded goal 5 minutes into the third period, 2-on-1, and Freddie was left to dry. You know, I think that says something about some of the players that are being put in these situations. Mitch Marner, Tyler Bozak, and JVR were on the ice for both goals last night. And you know what? That's saying something, not just about the way Babcock's utilizing his lineup, but last night, our fourth line was incredible. You were getting great shifts from
all year.
Gauthier, Martin, and Brown, and alternated with William Nylander. Great shifts. But what I think this team's biggest struggle right now is they're not getting secondary scoring. You look at the first 15, 20 games of the season, they were getting scoring, but not just from their top unit. Guys like Nazem Kadri, JVR, even Tyler Bozak, they were putting them in the net. They were doing the things that teams needed to do all season long. And right now, we're just not getting that secondary scoring. Look at Marleau. He's been off for the last two weeks. Nazem Kadri, one goal in 17 games. So I think that's a big issue that this team needs to look at. A part of it is puck luck. I understand that, and it'll come their way. But you hear teams all over the media. You look at guys like, oh, Edmonton Oilers struggles. They can't rely on just two people. That's something the Leafs were good at, getting secondary scoring from each of their line. Each line was contributing, whether it was defensive or offensive. So for those reasons, I think, you know, the Leafs are struggling a little bit, but they do have with last night's point, it's a 12-point cushion in the third spot of the Atlantic Division. I wouldn't say it's time to hit the panic button, but, you know, it's definitely time this team's got to figure something out.
Do you think they're not as good as people expected? Because expectations were high. I mean, every year with the Toronto Maple Leafs, expectations are high. But after last year, you said yourself before, they surprised everybody. A team 2 years ago came in dead last place and brought us Austin Matthews. Last year, barely clinched a playoff spot. So people this year were expecting, you know what, maybe the Leafs have a chance to win the Atlantic Division. Maybe the Leafs this year have a real chance to at least make the second, third round of the playoffs this year. Do you think maybe... I don't want to get all your inputs on this, but do you guys think maybe the Leafs were overlooked? Do you think the Leafs were just overhyped, you could say? Do you think that maybe people thought this team was better than what they really are?
Well, with a low expectation before... Low expectation before the last season coming in. We didn't think they were going to make the playoffs with this young core. And now that they made a first-round playoff, what, they faced who?
Last year in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Washington
Capitals.
And they lost that series, but they played...
Five of the six games went to OT.
Exactly. They played very well. And now most of us probably have higher expectations because we think that, you know, this might work out. This young core might do some damage in the league. And there's a lot of people that's saying, like, you know, Toronto Maple Leafs are like one of the best teams in the league right now.
I really do think the Leafs are a good hockey club. Okay. They're well coached, well managed. They have the right pieces in place to build that winning culture here. To say they were maybe overhyped, I wouldn't necessarily say that, because you look at last season, they earned that last playoff spot. They really did. Okay. Aside from a little bit of puck luck, you know, a team like built like Tampa Bay, they, with all the injuries they were dealing with too, to not make it with 1 point was tough. But you also got to look at the division they're playing in. We were saying early, look at the teams in the Met, okay? For 8 spots, I'd say the difference of points is maybe five points.
Yeah.
Your last-seeded playoff-contending team, Pittsburgh, has got 53 points right now. Mm-hmm. First place in the Met is 60. Each is about 2 points different from second place. I just think the divisions play a huge role in it, and I do hope the Leafs start to figure things out, because if a team was supposed to be built to win, blowing leads and becoming accustomed to bad habits isn't something that's going to teach this team to win at the end of the day.
I just want to... It's pretty much something we've been talking about here, but like Steph said, you got Shanahan, you got Lamoriello, you got Babcock. Can you name me another 3 people in the NHL that you'd rather be taking care of your team off the ice? I don't think there is one. But at the end of the day, I just think it comes down to the inexperience of our talented players, because a lot of the players that the Leafs look to, you know, the Marners, the Matthewses, the Nylanders, all these guys are so young still in their second and third years in the league. And it's kind of hard to expect them to produce, you know? Obviously, Babcock's going to say, you know, boys, come on, pull your weight here, pull your weight there. But at the end of the day, they're only in their sophomore seasons. And to even say the future is so bright, we know it is. But it's a process. Sports is a process. You know, that's why the regular season, it's amazing to do well in. But look at the Washington Capitals over the years. They come first every single season. They've always been a favorite to win the President's Cup. But what happens come playoff time? They can never get out of the second round.
Playoffs are another animal.
They are a different animal.
Last night was the 4th time this year the Leafs gave up a lead in the 3rd period and lost the game. So, yes, it is an experience. But at the same time, like we've been saying, it's a defensive issue. I think they really need to go out and try to get a defenseman either at the trade deadline, or maybe call up a young player from the minors.
But sorry to cut you off.
No.
Nikita Zaitsev is a huge part of the Leafs' defensive core. He's been out now for what, 3 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
Broken foot. You know, before he got injured, he was relied on a lot for the penalty kill and power play. He's one of their most effective puck-moving defensemen. So maybe when Zaitsev returns, hopefully it's from what I'm hearing, maybe another week, next week he'll be back in the lineup. But hopefully when he returns, things will change. After a guy like Zaitsev back in the lineup, do you say, okay, maybe this is time we give Travis Dermott a little bit of more chance, or Andreas Borgman, and sit down Roman Polak? Because me personally, I think from a defensive perspective, he's been their slowest asset, and you can really see that the NHL now is becoming a fast man's league. Quick, quick, quick. It's not as much as an enforcer and grinder's big hitting sport anymore. The game's getting quicker, faster, and the puck moving makes a big difference. So what is your guys' take on that?
I totally agree with everything you say. I think Zaitsev is the most important defenseman on the Leafs, because the whole point of being a defenseman, your main objective is when you break out the zone, it's all about that first pass. So if you can have that first pass and you can help your team break out of your defensive zone into the, through to the neutral zone and into the offensive zone, that's what matters. And how many times do you watch a Leafs game and you say, wow, Gardner and Riley, two of probably the best skaters in the whole entire National League, especially from the back end, but they just keep on making pointless mistakes.
Morgan Riley, I feel, though, he's had a good season so far. A couple of, I'll say, bonehead mistakes, but you know what? Jake Gardner is someone you gotta nod your head about. He's got so much talent, you wouldn't believe, but I don't see it in him. Sure, he wants to win, but you know what I mean? You don't see that passion. He's too nonchalant with the puck. Like, he thinks he has all the time in the world. You don't at the NHL level. Yeah, Morgan Riley, you know, he's made mistakes this year that have costed games. You look at the unnecessary pinch against the Columbus game. But you know what? At the end of the day, Morgan Riley, he's been playing top minutes against the other NHL's team's top units, okay? He is proven this year that he's finally starting to develop into that number one role. Jake Gardner, on the other hand, he's just too inconsistent for me. He had a phenomenal season last year, whereas Morgan Riley was hurt, struggled to get back to normal until playoffs. At the end of the day, this team is missing Zaitsev, and we'll see what happens when he returns.
All right, so let's move on from the Maple Leafs. Hopefully they could turn it around against the Ottawa Senators on Saturday night, Hockey Night in Canada. Now let's talk about the Toronto Raptors. The Toronto Raptors have been having a tough stretch, I'd say, against a lot of teams that have been winning teams over 500. They played against the Golden State Warriors on last Saturday, and they lost that game. They played against the Philadelphia 76ers on Monday. They lost that game as well, 117-111. And they played against a mediocre team, the Detroit Pistons, and it was a must-win game for them, coming off like two losses that pretty close games against Golden State. They made the comeback against Golden State. But what do you guys think about those two games or the month so far into the new year of the Toronto Raptors?
I'm so confident in this team, and I haven't felt that way in past years. Look, we know LeBron James is in the Eastern Conference. We know that the Raptors were eliminated two straight years by LeBron James. But you know what? Cleveland's struggling this year. They are. They're having trouble with the chemistry. They're having trouble mixing in IT with Jay Crowder. They're having trouble with Kevin Love shooting threes. You know what? Toronto, if they play the way that they can, I don't think they beat them, but I really think that they could give them a good run for their money. And who knows? Who knows? Toronto might pull up the upset. Crazier things have happened.
You know, Tristan, you bring up some good points. I think right now, the way that the Raptors bench has been playing, I mean, you have CJ Miles that just comes on and he drains his shot. You know, like, he's proven to be a consistent shooter not only this year, but throughout his career. So when you have him on the floor, even DeMar was saying it in a post-game interview, his ability to stretch the floor and open up the lane for guys like Lowry himself and even Ibaka, when you can just pick and roll and an easy 2 points for that, mm-hmm. It really helps But again, going back to the fact that LeBron James, he is in the Eastern Conference. I think people, I mean, obviously the Cavs should be worried, because when you lose this many games, it's always going to raise an eyebrow. But Isaiah Thomas just came back from a very brutal injury. Mm-hmm. Last night against, or it was the other night, against Golden State, he played well. Last night, look what he did against Orlando. Best player in that game. He was hitting his clutch shot when it mattered. And you know what? It proved. I honestly think that when time comes, Isaiah Thomas is back to being healthy, and this team gels closer to playoff times, they're going to be even scarier than last year, because now you also have the depth off their bench. Guys like Jay Crowder, who can play a lockdown role. That means LeBron doesn't have to spend all his time worrying about Kevin Durant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the depth on the Raptors has improved, but the depth with the Cavs has improved even more. So I think that's where the separation is still going to be the same, if not bigger.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because LeBron James is still LeBron James. You're not going to beat the guy.
Yeah, because LeBron James is in the way. That's what I pretty much DeMar DeRozan said a few weeks ago, that you know you still got to beat LeBron, because LeBron's been to how many straight finals?
Seven.
He's been there seven times, and all the other East teams need to beat LeBron and the Cavs just to make the finals. And he's been there for like how many times? So DeMar DeRozan and the whole squad, they've been playing an up and down for the past week only. But DeMar DeRozan himself has improved his game since January. He dropped 52 points, a new record, beating Vince Carter. He just got named an NBA All-Star starter.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that later. But what do you guys think about DeMar DeRozan's game? Is he now getting to that MVP candidate area, like at least top five MVP conversations?
I would say so.
He's got to be MVP. He's not MVP. He's going to be in the MVP discussion this year.
Look, DeMar DeRozan hasn't missed a Raptors game all year. He's appeared in all 43 games. He's averaging what? Let's look here. He's averaging about 26 points a game.
Okay.
He's set career highs this year, and let's not forget, he was just named to the All-Star team again last night.
He's just going to be the MVP conversation. He's not going to be MVP, of course.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm not saying he's the MVP.
No, Dimitri,
right now.
Dimitri was nodding his head. Now, of course, I agree with Dimitri. Like, he's not going to be winning MVP.
He's got to be in the conversation.
For sure, but clearly there's other.
Okay, like, what was MVPs. DeMar DeRozan's biggest problem, Dimitri, going into the season? What aspect of his game was that he really needed to focus on?
His three-point shot.
Do you know what his three-point percentage is right now?
It's the highest it's ever been by far.
34.5. He is improved that by a great deal. So DeMar DeRozan, now that he was already a great mid-range shooter, he was a good free throw shooter, he can stretch the floor, he could play well. What I think DeMar DeRozan needed to improve his three-point shooting, and because he's done that, he deserves to be an to be mentioned as an elite player in the NBA. Every team has their, you know, all-star player. DeMar DeRozan has done that now four times. He's been an all-star four times for the Toronto Raptors. As far as I'm concerned, the guy's got it at least mentioned in the MVP discussion.
Yeah, I agree. He will be mentioned, but again, I just don't think he'll be able to actually win the trophy because, I mean, look how valuable LeBron is to his team. Look how valuable Steph Curry is to his team. Look at the points that James Harden puts out every single night. I mean, what those guys do, those are superstars in the league. Because to me, you guys can join in on this question after I'm done with what I'm about to say, but to me, DeMar DeRozan still is not a superstar in the National Basketball Association.
Whoa.
Zero chance, because when push comes to shove in the playoff time, what has he done? He's beaten the Milwaukee Bucks. He got swept by the Washington Wizards. No, I'm not just saying it's only him. It's a team effort.
Team effort, of course.
Listen,
yeah, I don't understand.
Look at all the hassle that LeBron takes every single year because it's his team. This is DeMar DeRozan's team, right? So he needs to take a lot of that leadership and onus on himself and take the Raptors from a good team to an elite team and challenge the West in the NBA Finals.
Like, what would you define as a superstar in the NBA right now?
There's only a handful of superstars.
Yeah.
When I think of superstar, I think of the LeBron James, the Steph Currys, the James Hardens, the Russell Westbrooks of the world.
Anthony Davis.
Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant. those are superstars to me. Superstars are the players that
have proven
when
themselves.
When they come to town, kids want to go see that team. People want to go watch that team. Golden State was in town the other night. Tickets were, I think I saw on Ticketmaster, tickets were reselling for 10,000 courtside. Why? Because Steph Curry and Kevin Durant are coming to town. That's it. Sorry, go ahead.
Which leads me to the question. A team like Brooklyn, if LeBron's coming to town, that place, the Barclays Center, will be sold out. Do you really think that when the Toronto Raptors go there, I want to go see DeMar DeRozan?
I can agree with you on that.
Well, you could say about that about the Milwaukee Bucks. If the Milwaukee Bucks, they have a superstar, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Do you think
if
he's a superstar?
He's not. Listen,
he's a superstar. Listen, what do you mean?
I don't think he's a superstar yet.
Which brings me to the point again. I was just about to say this. You guys all know I'm Greek. So for me, the Greek freak, I love the guy. But listen, people don't understand. He just turned 23 on December 5th. To be 23 years old and already that good, people don't understand how much more the guy still needs to learn. He doesn't know. He doesn't have that consistent mid-range game. He doesn't have that consistent three-point shot. He doesn't know how to consistently spread the floor to his ability. But one thing that I will tell you is that over the years, he will be able to establish all those three things I just said because he has Jason Kidd. He hasn't proven himself just yet. He showed what his potential can be, but he is not a superstar at this point. A superstar at this point in time, no way.
I was trying to get to a point where you said that if LeBron James, who clearly is a superstar, and goes to Brooklyn, and the Brooklyn Nets, Barclays Center is going to sell out. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, like, not all teams with superstars on them are going to sell out. We could talk about Houston. We could talk about back then. LA Clippers when Chris Paul was on it, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan. I'm just like,
you gotta be box office to be a superstar. You gotta be box office. People, Kobe Bryant was a superstar.
Jordan,
Shaquille O'Neal was Jordan. A superstar. When those players come to town, I'm not even talking about that if LeBron James went to one team or went to another team. I'm saying simply when they come to town, when they play your city's team, that game is sold out. Why? Because people are coming to watch them.
Okay.
No, am I wrong though? Like Dimitri said before, people aren't gonna pay to go watch DeMar DeRozan, right? You'll pay to go see LeBron James. You'll pay to go see Steph Curry.
I mean, depending on the price though, the prices are pretty.
I'm not saying
right now.
He's a superstar, DeMar DeRozan. All I'm saying is that he has become an elite player at the very least in the NBA level.
Elite player, 100%. Trust me, I was one of DeMar DeRozan's doubter early on, one of his doubters early on in his career. I didn't think he'd be able to make this 3-point shot as consistent as it is now. But you know what? Practice, practice, practice. Look what Kobe did. Even Jordan, those guys, their shots weren't the best when they came into the league, but you knew that throughout the prime of their career and even on their way out, they established the best mid-range games we've ever seen in the history of basketball.
So the Toronto Raptors will face off the San Antonio Spurs tonight, Friday, at the ACC. San Antonio is pretty banged up right now. They got a lot of injured bodies. Kawhi Leonard has been out again. He only played, what, one game in the past week?
He's played nine all year.
Nine all year.
By the way, Kawhi Leonard's a superstar too.
Of course. He was MVP candidate right there. But it's just sad to see Kawhi Leonard not being able to play a lot of games this year. Rudy Gay's been out with some injuries. Now, there is a rumor that I want to relate with the Spurs that Kemba Walker, the Charlotte Hornets, have put Kemba Walker on the trading block as we go around the NBA. Kemba Walker, do you guys see him at any other team? I think San Antonio Spurs moving away from, not moving away, but like moving on from Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, is slowly transitioning to another core. Do you guys see Kemba Walker as a San Antonio Spur, or do you guys see him as on another team?
I think I can definitely see it. I mean, you're talking about Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili, two legends of the game. I mean, as soon as you saw Tim Duncan retire, you're like, wow, this franchise is over. It's going to slowly go down. But the one thing that they have is Greg Popovich. Easily the greatest or the second greatest coach of all time. It's a debate between him and Phil Jackson, but I mean, I think Greg Popovich can turn an average player into a great basketball player, and I think he can turn a great player into an elite basketball player. I mean, he's still a student of the game, even though he's a master. He still learns. And I just feel like with the proper coaching, Kemba Walker can be one of the best point guards in this league. I mean, look what he did with the March Madness with UConn.
Beautiful.
By himself, single-handedly took them and won that national championship. And that's why ever since he's come into the league, he's always been one of my favorite point guards. Because look at his team. They've got some role players on that team that do their job, lockdown shooters here and there.
Yeah.
But what he has to endure in this league, I think he's been special throughout his career so far.
It would be a true test. In a way, I know he's been in the league for so, how many years, but being in the West on a San Antonio Spurs team, and then you got to face Golden State with Stephen Curry, Chris Paul, and Houston Rockets, name another team.
Oklahoma
City Thunder with Russell Westbrook. That is a kind of a true test to him. If he, you know, we're just spreading rumors right now. We're just thinking if he does go to San Antonio, it would be a good test for him to prove to the league that he is one of the best point guards of the league. Because like being on Charlotte these past few years, they've been a mid-round playoff team, probably with contention with the Milwaukee Bucks, but probably lower than the Milwaukee Bucks. Milwaukee is probably better. But, you know, trying to add Dwight Howard, Nick Batum, it didn't work. And now that Adrian Wojnarowski is saying that most of the team, most of the good guys, starters, are going to be on the trading block, that's going to be a sad time for Charlotte fans, because we thought that we were going to make a good playoff run, probably obviously not going to get into finals, but prove to themselves that they are one of the best teams in the league, best teams in the East. But it does look like if reports are true that people are being on the training block, it's sad to see that they might have to hit a reset button for the franchise.
You see him going to the Knicks, considering he grew up in the Bronx?
I do, but I feel like that Knicks can give a few more chances for Frank Nikita, their draft star from last year.
Yeah.
I think they got to give some time. But, you know, it's intriguing to have Kemba Walker on New York Knicks. He made it, his name, you know, going to college and making that big shot at MSG too, being a Knicks guy or New York guy. You know, it would be nice to see Kemba Walker and Kristaps and Courtney Lee. That's a good, not a bad team right there. So let's move on to the NBA All-Star team. They've been announced starters. So do you guys know about the new All-Star format, NBA All-Star format?
It's playground style, right? They're two captains and they're going to pick the teams.
So yeah, for those that don't know, there's a new format. No more East versus West. It is what Tristan said, a playground situation where two captains, which have been chosen, LeBron James and Stephen Curry of the East and West respectively, they are team captains. They will be picking out of a pool of 12 players. So for as their starters, they'll pick a pool of starters. So out of all these starters that have already voted in, they'll pick as their starters between the two. So for example, LeBron James could be playing with DeMarcus Cousins. Stephen Curry could be playing with Giannis Antetokounmpo. And those are just two names that have been named as a starter. There's also Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, James Harden, Stephen Curry, as I said, Joel Embiid, named as a starter as well. Congrats to him. Kyrie Irving, and as we said before, DeMar DeRozan is a starter. What do you guys think about the new rules and like the starting squad that have already been voted in?
I love the concept. I hate the way the NBA is handling it. And the reason I hate the way the NBA is handling it is because they're not making it open to the public, the selections by the two captains. I want to see if Stephen Curry is going to pick Russell Westbrook on his team. I want to see if LeBron James decides to take Kyrie Irving or if he's going to take somebody else. I want to see that. The NHL did this a few years ago. They had a fantasy draft. They had two captains and they picked their teams. If you remember, one year, Phil Kessel of the Leafs went last. You know what he got? A car. He got a car for going last in a fantasy draft of the NHL All-Star Game. It's fun. It's for the fans. Why aren't they televising this? Why can't the fans see this? I want to see LeBron and Steph Curry pick their teams. I want to see this. I'm sure many fans do too.
I know a lot of fans do want to see this. It all depends on the NBA. Obviously, they need some broadcasting entities. Obviously, NBA on TNT would be perfect because TNT shows the All-Star weekend, the games Saturday night. So why not show it on there? But just not showing it, you know, why, like, it just hides a good aspect of, like, you know, having fun about this All-Star weekend, which is supposed to be, all All-Star weekends should be a fun time, and we should see that. I know there might be some, like, you know, petty wars, like if LeBron James has one more pick left and Kyrie Irving's it's between Kyrie Irving and DeMar DeRozan. He picks up DeMar DeRozan and Kyrie Irving is left to play with Stephen Curry. Obviously, Twitter's going to blow up. NBA Twitter, for sure. Petty wars, but Dimitri, what'd you want to say?
Well, I agree with it and I don't. Let's first start why I don't agree with it. I don't agree with it because, like we said, it's not going to be televised, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of the whole fun of having it playground style, to see who's going to pick who, right? So, I mean, as soon as I found out this wasn't going to be televised, I was pretty mad because I was looking forward to see who was going to match up with who and who was going to take on who, right?
Mm-hmm.
As to why I like it, I think it's great to be able to, like, you shouldn't only, in an All-Star game, you shouldn't only be able to play with someone from the Eastern Conference or someone from only from the Western Conference. I think it's amazing how you get to mingle talent and see, and because that's what really being an All-Star is about. It's about having fun, giving back to the fans, you know? To me, that's what's best. And even LeBron James has said it over the years. He's like, during the All-Star breaks, our Sundays haven't been the same as what they were, how they were in the past 5-10 years, you know?
It's transitioned from the old East versus West. It's not fun anymore.
Because back then, like, not even back then, even when we were growing up, guys like Allen Iverson, guys like Jason Kidd, all those guys.
Shaq.
Like, they actually, I don't want to say they went hard in an All-Star game, but there was a lot more intensity and more of a high-tempo game. That's what you want to see in an All-Star game.
I think they actually put the effort in. I don't think the past few years, not many All-Stars have put the effort. We haven't seen it.
It's been a joke. Sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead. Speak in the mic.
I agree with what Dimitri's saying, right? Like, it sucks that something like this isn't going to be televised. I mean, this is something the fans would definitely like to see. I like the fact that they did change up the format a bit, the NBA. Playground style, picking your own teams. I think that adds a depth and a texture, to the league that, you know, it's something different. Let's give it a whirl. Maybe the fans will like it. But as a viewer's perspective, I've always found the games boring. The skills competition is phenomenal.
Amazing.
To see three-point shooters and the slam dunk contest, all that stuff's amazing to watch. But I feel at the end of the day, the All-Star games is useless. It's a shame to see the players go hard for what, the last 4, 5, even 6 minutes of the fourth quarter. It's boring. It was better when, what you guys mentioned, Shaq, Kobe, at least they put a little bit of effort. You saw they were playing like true All-Stars. This, to me, it's just, it's a persona thing. Right? You know what I mean? No one's playing defense. No one's playing offense. I get it's all for fun and games, but you're the best of the best in the league for a reason. Prove it. Show everyone what you're capable of doing. Because at the end of the day, when you're playing with a bunch of All-Stars, it's something to watch. And to be bored about watching it, I don't think it's right.
Should they do what the NFL does? Should they hold the All-Star game at the end of the year? That way, after the players don't have any excuses. No. If you're out of the playoffs, you have no excuse not to try. You have no excuse not to show up to the game.
Well, it's not just about trying. They are trying. They just want to see a little bit more effort in the games. But just pushing it down, they're going to be tired after having a long season, no shooting, week break. What if they're going to have move that down at the end of the season and in the playoffs? How they're going to be tired. They're not going to be able to want to play in a summer game. Well, it would be nice But there is also the 3-on-3 big three happening, and the summer league is going to happen as well. We don't want to have that little small gap in during February where there's no games being played. They have a 1 week. Every team has a 1 week bye. It doesn't seem right, but I know what you mean. It would be a consideration, but I don't think that'll ever happen. I think it should stick to the NFL.
Yeah, I agree. The NFL is the only league that should have their All-Star game before the finals or wherever they have before the Super Bowl, right? But I also think the fact that the NFL is such a short season.
It's only 16 weeks.
There's 16 weeks plus a bye is 17 weeks, and then you have the 4 weeks off in the playoffs, right? Look at any other sport in the world. Hockey, they start in October and they go to what, June?
It's 10 months.
Same with basketball.
Look at baseball.
10 months.
Baseball, the same thing. Even soccer, I understand there's no all-star game or anything in soccer, but soccer is literally a 12-month round thing. You've always got something going on, whether it's your domestic league, the Champions League, European or World Cup qualifiers. There's always something going on in soccer. And look, this summer we have the World Cup coming. Could you imagine if in soccer they truly did have an all-star game? Where would you be able to fit it in? There's already people complaining. The World Cup should be 48, should be 64 teams. How are you going to make that work? There's way too many games that need to be played. People are forgetting, yeah, they're athletes, but you know what? Athletes, they need rest too. You can't go a month. You can't go hard 11 months and then expect 1 month and then to go back at it in any sport. Not just soccer. I'm just saying in any sport in general.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. Soccer is a different animal though when we're comparing the major sports in North America, where we're comparing basketball, hockey, baseball, those sports. But when you're looking at it from a fan's perspective, if you bought tickets to if the All-Star game was in Toronto and you guys had bought tickets or you guys had tickets, right? Would you not want to see them at least give a little bit more effort than seeing a 202 to 198 game where Steph Curry is lying on the free throw line as somebody blows by him to throw a dunk down?
But you were saying Kobe Bryant's last All-Star game.
Yeah.
I think he means like more from like a
team,
like a neutral point of view. Like, forget the fact that was Kobe Bryant's last game.
As a basketball fan?
As a basketball fan, you want to see them like...
As any sports fan in general, you want to see a competition. At the end of the day, these NBA players, they play in a game, they'll be happy, they'll go and shoot the ball from half court there, half of the court. Like, you know, just play smart basketball. We want to see a game where the intensity is picked up. Everyone knows it's an all-star game. It's for fun. But no one wants to see you really not care. It's what Tristan said. No one wants to see a game 200 to 198. Because at the end of the day, that doesn't happen in a real-life game. Let's just see a pace of a real-life sport. You could talk about this with any all-star. To me personally, even the NHL all-star games, I find boring. The fact that they changed it to 3-on-3 was something awesome and it was cool. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's not something I would pursue or I would like to watch. To me, I'd rather see like a tournament of something exactly. Go place. Like you look at the NHL, what they did last season with the World Cup of Hockey. Right? The World Cup of Hockey, some people didn't like it, some people did like it, but I would rather have a World Cup of Hockey tournament than watch a weekend-long All-Star game, because you're seeing at the end of the day, the best of the best compete for one thing and a prize.
I agree, Steph. I mean, it's sad that it comes down to the players not wanting to be injured, you know? Because
yeah, I was gonna get
it is true. If the All-Star game is in the middle of the season, if you have players going all out for an All-Star game, you know there's going to be at least one injury. And that team who has that star from their team, they're going to be very disappointed. So it's literally impossible to make them go 100% for 48 minutes.
Maybe just 90%.
And I like what the NHL did with their All-Star game. What they did last year was the NHL realized they're not trying. Not that they weren't trying, that the players weren't giving as much effort as they should.
They still don't. 100%.
But what they did last year was...
charity.
They made it a little tournament, and the winner gets, what is it, $1 million for charity?
Yeah.
That's a nice thing to do. Yeah. The NBA should think about something like that.
Well, No. Well, they did. They did kind of do that a few years ago.
NBA cares.
No, they actually... it wasn't just NBA Cares. I don't think it was NBA Cares. It was just a lot of two organizations, and then they had actual team captains, not like our All-Star format this year, but it was East versus West, and then I believe one team, whoever wins, there is a good amount of money that's going to go to charity. Mm-hmm. I think that was both All-Star Game and All-Star Saturday, where, you know, dunk contest and all that. But I know, like, it would be nice, an incentive that there is a reason to play hard. I think that's what MLB has been doing in the past few years. If they win an All-Star Game,
you used to host the world. I used to like that. I mean, that was a good system in terms of, you know, making the players try for the game. But bigger picture, it really isn't fair. If you have a team who had the best record in baseball, but because they were in the National League and the American League won the All-Star Game, it wouldn't be fair that a wild card team should host the World Series. So that's a problem, and they did get rid of that this year. So, yeah, but that is a good, again, another narrative you could use.
All right. Moving on from the NBA, big weekend in the NFL, Championship Sunday. We got an AFC Conference Final between the New England Patriots and the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the NFC Final with the Minnesota Vikings taking on the Philadelphia Eagles. We in for an exciting weekend or what?
First, let's talk about the reports are coming out. Tom Brady, is he injured or not? There's a... Wait, you like guys like if he's injured? You guys want him to be injured?
Yep.
I know.
I don't wish injury upon anybody, but...
Is it time
is let's see what... Let's say Tom Brady is really out. Let's see what the team is really made of.
And the reason why we're saying why we think he might be out, it's all reports. We don't know if Bill Belichick or wherever he's from, New England, trying to psych out the Jacksonville Jaguars about, oh, Tom Brady, our star quarterback, been to how many straight Super Bowls, won three or four of them, and now he's trying to fake out the team being injured. His throwing hand is broken. They had to take x-rays. He has to wear gloves now. After, in the beginning of the season, when a reporter asked Tom Brady, do you like wearing gloves? He doesn't like wearing gloves. And now he's, during practice, he wants to wear gloves, trying to protect his throwing hand.
All right, so let's get on with it. I guess we'll start off with the AFC game. The Patriots taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars. What do you guys think is going to happen this weekend? We'll start with you, Tristan.
Is a question.
Yes, it's a question.
I think, come on. New England is going to win this game. New England is going to win this game. And back to the Tom Brady, I actually wanted to comment on this before. You know, sorry, Steph, I didn't let you know that before. I wanted to comment on the Tom Brady thing. This is classic Patriots. This is classic Bill Belichick, Tom Brady. They're not going to let you know nothing. Tom Brady, Jerry, you made a great point. Tom Brady doesn't like wearing gloves. He's wearing two gloves on both hands, the hand that's not hurt and the hand that supposedly hurts. Yeah. His hands may be a little bit sore, maybe a little swollen, who knows, right? They're not going to let the media know nothing until Sunday, and even then you might not know.
So it's all a mental game.
I think it's all a mental game. I don't even think that to be honest with you, I don't think there's any issue whatsoever. Tom Brady has done well in his career. Here's a book out on sustained peak performance.
Did you read that book?
Yes, I do. I own that book. I've read every page, cover to cover.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Drinks a lot of water. Yeah, I know that. But regardless, what I'm trying to say is, Tom Brady, New England Patriots, I think they're going to their eighth Super Bowl, and I think they beat the Jacksonville Jaguars Sunday.
Dimitri?
I think New England will win as well. I mean, whether or not Tom Brady's 100% fit or whether Tom Brady's got a broken hand, we all know he's going to start that game. It really doesn't matter. Of course it's mind games. I mean, like Tristan said, it's classic Patriots. This is what they have done throughout their whole career together, Belichick and Brady. But you know what? I mean, it's worked. Look at them. Five Super Bowls together. I mean, you're talking about the greatest quarterback and coach combination we've ever seen. in the NFL. Some would even argue in sports history. So I mean, what they've done as an organization is incredible. Don't worry about Spygate. Don't worry about Deflategate. You know, regardless, if you have Brady on your team, you're going to have a chance to win. Which also brings me to the fact of Brady kind of reminds me of LeBron James. If you take LeBron James off the Cavs, they're not going to be a good team. Or at least they won't be a solid team that can contend. If you take Brady off the Patriots, they'll be the exact same thing. Look at the year he got hurt. They had Matt Castle. What was it? 8-8 they went, Tristan, that one year?
I think so.
And they just slipped out of the wild card, right? But I mean, you can't take that away from a team. You can't take Brady away from the Patriots. You can't take LeBron away from the Cavs. It's just, it's in their DNA. You know what I mean? So for me, I mean, you look at Jacksonville. They have the best pass defense in the league. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to, is Blake Bortles going to be able to pick apart that stubborn Patriots defense? I understand there's no Dante Hightower. I understand Rob Ninkovich isn't there. But Belichick will always get his players ready for the big game.
What do you guys think the score is going to be and what team's going to win?
I'm going to be a believer here. I'm going to go Jacksonville wins 21-17. Just because of what Dimitri just said, you know, I feel Jacksonville's had one of the best defenses in the NFL all season long. Best pass defense. So it's an old saying, defense wins championships. If the defense could get to Tom Brady and the New England Patriots, I think they really do have a great chance. I mean, coming off of momentum, they kicked out the number two seeded, Pittsburgh Steelers. Okay. Sure, there was a couple of concerns about questionable play calls maybe that the Steelers made that costed them the game. But at the end of the day, you know, Jacksonville earned it. Jacksonville played the better defense that game. And you just got to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, honestly, no one's going to beat the Patriots in New England, Foxborough. No one, like,
it's a fortress.
Exactly. Like, they probably might have a run for the Jags. They might have do some stuff with them. But I think Patriots might go to their eighth Super Bowl run. Eighth Super Bowl run. Score rise, I'd say 30-14 Patriots.
I'm with JR. I think it'll probably be a two-possession game. I mean, I think you're going to see Brady. He's never been really that spectacular when it comes to, like, the first quarter, even maybe the first half if you want to stretch it. But, I mean, legends, they become clutch when it matters the most, right? Look what Brady did last year. He literally brought that team back single-handedly. Yeah, the defense made stops, and they obviously they played a big part too. But I just think you can only contain Brady for so long. The field's going to open up. The Jaguars aren't, they haven't even, it's going to be too hard to maintain.
So your score?
Honestly, I'll go along the same lines as JR. Maybe 35-15 or something like that. I'm not sure.
This game is going to be close until the fourth quarter. And then Blake Bortles is going to be Blake Bortles, and Tom Brady is going to be Tom Brady. I don't think Blake Bortles is going to come up big in the fourth quarter, and I think Tom Brady is too much of Tom Brady to not be Tom Brady, if that makes sense, in the fourth quarter. Now, I'm not going to dismiss Jacksonville's defense. Arguably the best defense in football, right? Telvin Smith, Barry Church, Calais Campbell, Jalen Ramsey. But you know what? Are you really going to contain Rob Gronk, the means of, for example, a lot of the speculation is Jalen Ramsey is going to be on Rob Gronkowski all day. But what about Brandon Cooks? What about Danny Amendola? What are you going to do about those guys? What are you going to do about James White running it through the backfield? So I think Jacksonville, as good as that defense is, they have a lot to deal with the Patriots. And that's why I say it's going to be close heading into the fourth quarter. And then I think the Patriots are going to break through. I say Patriots win 28-14.
So just before we move on to the Vikings and the Eagles, the Jaguars' one big struggle this year has been the rush. They haven't been able to defend the rush that well at all, actually. Mm-mm. So, I mean, you look at the Vikings defense, every single place in that defense, they are amazing. The Jaguars' pass defense is outstanding. But when you look at that rush, you got White or Lewis coming out of that backfield. I mean, even though Brady throws a ball maybe, what would you say, 50 times a game on average?
Roughly,
right? How many touches would you say the running backs would get between the two? Maybe like 20 touches each. They're still going to get at least 100 yards. Because the Jaguars, they can't defend that. And that's why I think you're going to see a lot of slot play. Brady is going to find his halfbacks off the snap. Because in games like this, people know the ball's going to go to Gronkowski. They know the ball's going to go to Cooks. But Brady's always been able to switch it up and make you think, oh, I'm going to do this. He's actually going to do the other thing. And I think that's where the game's going to be won and lost.
Well, we'll see. That's Sunday at 3:30 in Foxborough. And there is another football game on Sunday. It is the Minnesota Vikings and the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, as much as I want to talk about this matchup first, I'm still in shock at how Malcolm Mitchell missed that tackle on Stephon Diggs. And let him go when run in the winning touchdown. I'm still speechless. I mean, Dimitri, come on. How improbable of a win was that?
It was very unlikely, but I mean, if you look back at that play, the ball was snapped with 10 seconds on the clock.
With no timeouts,
which I understand. But the one thing that I think people are not understanding, and you even see Stephen A. Smith took to Twitter and say, this is one of the worst defensive plays in sports history. Uh-huh. Stephon Diggs catches the ball from Case Keenum with five seconds remaining on the clock. Uh-huh. Even when he catches that ball, even though Stephon Diggs is a sophomore, I mean, his numbers kind of speak for themselves. He's been phenomenal in his first 2 years with the Minnesota Vikings. When he catches that ball, I guarantee you that he puts his momentum towards the sidelines. The only reason why he got that touchdown is because of the missed tackle, right? But I mean, listen, any football player, any wide receiver who has been this good for so long, well, not so long, just the 2 years, but he's way past his years, Stephon Diggs, by the way. He's way past his years. Yeah. He's like an Odell. But he catches that ball. I guarantee you he goes out at the sideline and Forbath comes out and he kicks a field goal. But then again, being a Saints fan, I'm not a Saints fan. I'm just saying from the neutral point of view, if you're a Saints fan, you would rather lose off a field goal than the way that you lost that game. Because the way that that happened, like we've said, it probably should never have happened that way. It's different, you know? Where Diggs catches the ball and he goes out of bounds, I think it was a 52 or maybe I think it might have been a 58-yard field goal.
Oh, yeah.
It's tough.
So many things need to go right. You got to snap the ball. He's got to make sure the laces are out. He's got to make the field goal.
Exactly. And you know what? Minnesota has been plagued with a lot of missed field goal kicks in their past. So you know what? You never know. I'd rather lose the game from a kick than lose the game from how it happened like that. Because you know what? As good as Drew Brees is, Drew Brees can't be losing a game like that.
I mean, it's heartbreaking either way to lose a game, you know, with 10 seconds left, no timeouts, and you lose the game. But yeah, for sure, that was just you feel bad for the kid. You really do. You feel bad for him. I guarantee you he'll learn from it. He'll come back a better player for it. But okay, so moving forward to this week now, they're playing the Philadelphia Eagles in Philly now. Philly is without Carson Wentz, obviously went down with that season-ending injury back in December. Who do you guys think has the edge in this game? Who's winning it?
Well, for starters, I think it's going to be it's going to be a close game, okay? Mm-hmm. You look at where the teams were at the start of the season. I have it written down here. The game's going to, of course, it's going to feature two quality defenses, but at the end of the day, it's going to come down to which quarterback can do it. At the end of this day, they both started the season as backup QBs, right?
Yeah.
Keenum was actually the third string, but that's because Bridgewater was hurt, right? But I guarantee you, in a perfect world, when you have Bradford, Bridgewater, and Keenum, it would be the order that I just said in.
I think the Vikings, at the end of the day, have the better passer in Keenum. So we'll just have to see what happens. I'm taking the Vikings 21-16.
JR?
I agree with Stefano. 26-16. Say 26-16.
21-16.
Sorry, 21-16. Because I believe that Minnesota can actually build off that momentum. It was a huge, huge touchdown. Obviously, a game-winning touchdown, and being able to, it'll look nice. Minnesota playing in the Super Bowl in Minnesota, it'll be a great storyline. I think they can build out the momentum and win against the Philadelphia Eagles. I was supposed to say 76ers. Minnesota over Philly, 21-16.
And just like going back to Case Keenum, I mean, there's a lot of talk about him all year. You know, he doesn't always look the prettiest doing things, but he always finds a way to just get the things done. And that's why I think they're going to come out on top. Tristan, what do you think?
This is going to be a close game on the simple fact that Minnesota's defense is elite. And Philly's offense, I don't feel like they're going to put up a ton of points against them. Now, I personally think being at home, having the doubters say you can't do without Carson Wentz, I think Nick Foles is going to come up to the task. And I think the Eagles are going to win 17-14. It's going to be a low-scoring game. Eagles win 17-14. But two things need to go right for that. One, LeGarrette Blount's got to come up big in short-yarded situations. He's got to pound the ball through the hole. He's got to, that offensive line's got to make holes for him. And he's got to get the ball 3-4 yards a carry. And second, Nick Foles has to make the throws he can. Nick Foles, yes, we all understand. Carson Wentz went down. He was an MVP candidate, and the Eagles, you know, odds to win the Super Bowl went down with it. But you know what? You're the quarterback now. Prove him wrong. I want to see you make the throws. I want to see you trust your receivers. Trust Alshon Jeffrey. Trust Mac Collins. Trust these guys. I think the Eagles win 17-14.
I have a lot to agree with what you guys have to say. I mean, this Minnesota Vikings defense is looking like it's an all-time defense. I mean, they averaged, what is it, less than 20 points a game. Like, not many teams are able to do that, right? Like I said earlier in the show when we were talking about the Jags, the Vikings can defend the rush. They can defend the pass, the zone, the man-to-man coverage. Everything they can do perfectly. But Case Keenum is my big worry because I know he's been doing it all season, but he hasn't really had that big, big, big game in the playoffs yet. I mean, prior to that catch by Stephon Diggs, he had an interception and zero touchdown passes. So really, for pretty much the whole duration of that game, he didn't even throw a touchdown pass, you know what I mean? But I think it's going to come down to, like you guys have been saying, which quarterback can be more consistent. And as of right now, I understand that Case Keenum has played more of the season, but I feel like people are forgetting too much what Nick Foles only did 2 years ago with the Eagles. I mean, they were an amazing ball club. Like, that was a scary team to play against. And they're just, I'd say they're even scarier now. To me, I trust Nick Foles. I'd like to say I trust Case Keenum. I'll trust Case Keenum if the Vikings can win. And to me, defense wins championships. The Vikings have the better defense. So I'm going to go with 27-20 victory for the Minnesota Vikings.
Okay.
All right. I think we're going to wrap it up there. This podcast has been almost an hour. Did a pretty good job for our first podcast. You know, this is just our first time. We are just regular journalism students from Seneca College. Thank you again for Seneca College actually having some rooms to book to actually record some podcasts. And
we should get this room. It was a mission. We barely got this room available.
Yeah, well, that's a different conversation. But yeah, thank you guys for tuning in. But first, where can they find you at, Tristan?
Yeah, guys. So, you know, hit me up on Twitter at tmarcajani13 and on Instagram at tristanmarcajani.
I should have went first, but first, Dimitri Daffos, where can they find you at, man?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Dimitri Daffos. Dimitri, that is D-E-M-E-T-R-I, Daffos, D-A-F-O-S. You can also find me on LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn's a very professional way of interacting with people. So I'd say those are my three social media handles that you can find me at.
Steph, where can they find you at?
You can find me on Twitter at Pelleggi98 or even on Instagram at Stefano_Pelleggi. And just a little bit about what JR was saying, you know how we are, journalism students
trying to figure out how to create podcasts. Don't be afraid to hit us up, send us any information, anything you'd want us to touch base on within our next podcasts. The more you send, the more you info you give us, the more help you can give us to delivering you guys better podcasts.
Yeah, we like to engage with our listeners, if there are any.
Hopefully there are.
We do have our email up, justsportstalkshow@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, justsportstalk_. Tristan, want you to say something?
All the social media and our Twitter account information will be in the description, so if you guys want.
Thanks to our music.
Thanks to Christian Forger for leading us up with the good track, and Michele for designing our logo. And we'll see you next week with Just Sports Talk.